This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
People ask, what will happen after this pandemic? And the answer is, the next emergency is already developing on us. Many species alive on Earth will collapse due to climate change, and it could be much sooner than we thought. That is the next great emergency. According to new science, if we go back to normal business, masses of species are going to die together, abruptly, possibly starting even within this decade. But we can still flatten that curve and give those animals, plants, and other works of nature several more decades so we don't overload ecological systems with mass deaths. That's all in a striking new paper published this April in the leading journal Nature. And despite the current health emergency, you need to hear this news. These scientists warn potentially catastrophic loss of global biodiversity is on the horizon. One of the three authors is Dr. Alex L. Pigott. He is a postdoctoral research scientist in the Center for Biodiversity and Environment Research, located at the University College London. Dr. Pigott has co-authored at least 33 papers and specializes in the distribution of living things on this planet. He joins us now from England. Alex Pigott, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, biodiversity has never been a sexy, must-know topic for the broad public, but to be real, can human civilization expect to survive without that broad range of other species on the planet with us?
Well, I think it has been a sexy topic, and the answer to your question is, I believe, no. I think that we're increasingly understanding how human society is inextricably dependent on the ecosystems of which we are a part, and we can't be separated from that.
As we speak, Alex, the world's big coral nursery, the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, continues to die off even more widely than before. Could that be an early signal of the more serious die-offs projected in your paper?
Yes, I think so. So, you know, what we've seen in the Great Barrier Reef over the last 3 years are these three major mass bleaching events. These aren't localized events. These are very widespread and are being caused when we get these temporary excursions of the temperature to these much hotter conditions than the corals in that region are adapted to. And I think this is a potential precursor for the kinds of continuous and chronic impacts that we're projecting in our study.
And if emissions continue to increase as they were, how soon could ocean systems collapse?
So our models are suggesting that these impacts could start as early as the current decade. These are really concerns that we should have for the present day. Often when we think about climate change, we might think about, oh, well, we're worried about the world that our children may inherit. But actually, I think what our results are showing is that these major impacts of climate change are potentially going to start very soon indeed.
Alex, why didn't other scientific projections pick up how soon natural systems could enter a stage of die-off?
So there's been a lot of work on trying to understand what the world might look like in terms of biodiversity in the future. But a lot of the time when we're making these sorts of projections, we often use a single snapshot of the future. So that might be the year 2050 or 2070 or even 2100, which are these dates that are quite remote in the future. What we did in our study was that we actually broke down those projections at these annual time slices so we could actually look at how the risk from climate change to biodiversity would accumulate in a more continuous way.
And your work suggests we may not lose a steady trickle of species as the climate warms year by year in a regular way. Instead, living systems could hit a brick wall where whole webs collapse together. How would you describe that, Alex?
Yes, that's right. So, I mean, this has been a big unknown in ecology is, again, in addition to when these events might happen, are these events going to accumulate gradually, or could we see the sudden collapse of ecosystems as a result of climate change? And our results are pointing towards the possibility that actually these abrupt disruptions of ecosystems may be more likely than a gradual loss of species. And the reason we find that in our models is that the way that we've quantified this risk of ecological disruption is to take a set of species living at a particular place on the Earth's surface, and to ask what's the maximum temperature that each of those species has been exposed to over recent history. And then we ask, well, when in the future will the temperature in that location continuously exceed those upper thermal limits? And what we find is that actually many species living in a location tend to have similar bounds on the kinds of temperatures they've experienced. And as a result, when you move into the future, those bounds are exceeded almost simultaneously.
This reminds me a bit of the spread of COVID-19, which shows up as a few cases and then a cluster and then a steep rise like an explosion of cases. In a similar way, we might tolerate the loss of a few species here and there. We are already tolerating that, not realizing in the future that that signal could be a whole system about to crash. It's going to be difficult to get people and governments to get serious about this before it happens. Alex, what do you think?
So I think there's an interesting parallel here between the current crisis we're seeing and also the looming climate crisis. There's an important difference, right? The mechanisms driving these potentially abrupt changes are very different. But I think the point that we really need to act early if we're going to avert these crises in the future. By the time that things start to become bad in your local area, it's probably going to be too late already. We've already hit that wall. So I think the results that our study is showing is that, you know, by the time you start seeing species going extinct in your local area, then really it's going to be too late to act. We're really at the start of this curve now in terms of climate change. We're already starting to see these really catastrophic impacts in places like the Great Barrier Reef that you mentioned, but also more widespread. We're still at the start of this curve. We still do have the capacity to avert these risks, but we have to act now. We can't wait until those impacts are already upon us.
Well, we talked about the oceans, but if civilization returns to our former rate of emissions, the business-as-usual scenario labeled as RCP 8.5 by the United Nations, when might we see widespread collapse of living things on land where we are, according to your research?
So our results suggest that the impacts of climate change on biodiversity are likely to manifest themselves earliest in the oceans. And the reason for this, and in particular the tropical oceans, and the reason for this is that in these regions, temperature is actually relatively stable. You don't get these wild fluctuations in temperature like you find at high latitudes. So the species that live in the oceans and the tropics tend to be adapted to a very narrow range of conditions. Even though actually the rate of warming in the tropical oceans is much lower than the rate of warming at high latitudes on land, it's the species in the tropical oceans that are likely to be exposed to these potentially dangerous conditions first. And that's something that we project could start to happen this decade. And then in terms of when the impacts spread onto land, that's something that could happen in the next couple of decades. So in the 2040s, moving to the mid of the century, that's when we start to see tropical forests also being exposed to these dangerous conditions. And then depending on the emission scenario that we follow, those risks of abrupt ecological disruption can then also spread to higher latitudes. There's one, I think, important clarification to make here about our emissions pathway. So we looked at a range of different emission scenarios. So these are essentially scenarios of how human emissions might change over this coming century. And then based on those different emission scenarios, we then make these projections of potential biodiversity loss. It's been suggested recently that this idea of business as usual is unrealistic because many countries have already made pledges to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. So why look at this business as usual scenario if it's potentially an unlikely path that will follow? And I think an important point to make here is that we're looking at an emissions pathway that could be caused, as it is currently, being primarily driven by human emissions. But if we get potential feedbacks in the climate system, such as, for example, the collapse of the Amazon rainforest, which would then release huge amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, then actually this could then further drive emissions upwards. So I think it's an important point to make that these very high emission scenarios, where we on average across the globe see more than 4 degrees warming, is still something that's very much on the cards unless we drastically reduce our emissions now.
Yes, we're very nervously watching permafrost melt here in Canada and also in Russia. Now, in addition to the when whole webs of living things could fail, you also provide a handy YouTube video showing where the greatest devastation of species is likely to happen. And you show graphics of the Eastern Pacific with some of the greatest losses around Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, and the Philippines. One thing I didn't understand, it looked to me like one chart showed the worst case 100% species loss in some places. Surely I'm reading that incorrectly. What does that 100% level mean?
So that is actually what we found. So we found that of all the species that we looked at in that location, and bearing in mind across our entire analysis, we looked at over 30,000 species. What our projections show is that all of the species that currently live in that location will, at some point in the future, which we estimate in our study, be exposed to temperatures that are hotter than anything those species have previously experienced across their entire geographic distribution. And I think an important point to make here is, well, what does it mean when we're projecting exposure to these novel temperatures? And I think the best way to summarize this is essentially species in the future, over the coming decades, will be exposed to temperatures beyond which we have any evidence that those species can survive in the wild. It doesn't necessarily mean that when a species is exposed to these dangerous conditions, it is definitely going to immediately become extinct. Some species may be able to adapt. Some species may, although we don't currently know this, have a tolerance to potentially higher conditions, but we essentially don't have any evidence for this. So what we're really documenting here and trying to understand is when in the future will we pass this threshold where essentially biodiversity is stepping into the unknown. We don't have any evidence that it can actually survive at these higher temperatures. And I think an important point to make here is that actually what we're currently seeing in places like the Great Barrier Reef is suggesting that actually species are living very close to their thermal limits. And as we start to transgress those limits, population declines and extinctions are likely to follow for many species.
Can my many listeners in the northern latitudes feel comfortable that a crash of species in the tropics won't affect us very much?
Unfortunately, no. And I think there's, again, two points I'd want to make here. The first is that we project that the impacts of climate change are truly global. There aren't any ecosystems on the planet which won't be affected by climate change. We find that actually the most sensitive species live in the tropics, but there's also very good reasons to expect that actually the impacts that we're documenting at high latitudes could be underestimated. For example, we're just looking at when the average temperature over the course of an entire year shifts beyond that range of temperatures that a species has experienced. We're not, for example, looking at the loss of sea ice, which we know is an important habitat for species at high latitudes. We're not, for example, looking at when a species of plant on which another animal might depend is going to become extinct. And I think if you start building in all these other factors and all these possible chains of reactions between species and these ecosystems, then the impacts could be even more severe than we're projecting. And I think the other reason why we should be concerned, even if we're not living in those ecosystems that are at high risk, is because actually all of these ecosystems form part of the biosphere. And an impact in one region will have an impact in another. So, for example, one of the regions that we highlight as being particularly sensitive is the Amazon rainforest. We focused on the animals in this study rather than the plants, but what we project is that over the course of the century, many of those species are going to be at risk of extinction. And that's really problematic for the functioning of the forest. We know, for example, that many of the birds and primates in these forests are fundamental in dispersing the seeds of trees, and that's the way that the forest regenerates. That's the way that new trees grow and then lock up the carbon. So if we start to see the loss of these animal communities, we also expect similar loss of the plant species in this region, which would then be impacting on things like the storage of carbon, which, as I've already mentioned, could then push temperatures further up. So all these systems are interrelated. We need to be concerned about all of them.
When it comes to the possible collapse of species, what is the difference between warming 2 degrees C by 2100 and more than 4 degrees C by the end of the century?
We found an enormous difference when you start comparing those kinds of scenarios. So we cut this up in two different ways, and these give you quite different angles in which you can look at biodiversity. So one perspective is to ask how many species are going to be impacted by these changes. And what we see as you move from say, a 4-degree scenario, which is if we continue with our current high emissions, so shifting that to below 2 degrees, then you see around a 60% reduction in the number of species that are exposed to these dangerous climate conditions. The other way you can look at it is to ask not how many species are going to be exposed, but what percentage of the planet, in terms of its area, is at risk. And what we find is that at 4 degrees centigrade of warming on average across the planet, approximately 15% of the world's ecosystems are at high risk, these very abrupt and sudden losses of biodiversity. As you then shift the increase in temperature down to below 2 degrees centigrade, you actually limit that risk to below 2% of the world's surface. It's worth bearing in mind that, you know, 2% sounds pretty good, sounds like it's a minimal risk, but actually some of those ecosystems included in that 2% are among the most diverse on the planet, so places like coral reefs. So because of the emissions that we've already released, because of the warming that's essentially already built into the climate, we will unfortunately continue to see these kinds of impacts that we're seeing today on the coral reef ecosystem. The key message from our paper is we actually do still have time to really determine the fate of biodiversity over this century, and reducing our emissions, getting below 2 degrees C, can really avert risks across many thousands of species and across the majority of the Earth's surface.
Well, suppose we do slash emissions, a kind of stay-at-home therapy for the atmosphere and renewable energy. We give the plants, animals, insects, and all extra decades. Is there science to say that species can adapt to much higher temperatures in decades, or do they really need thousands or millions of years to make that change?
So I think part of this is about, can species adapt? There is some evidence, and this is a really hot topic at the moment, is, you know, how long do species need to adapt? And I think that very much depends on the species that you're looking at. If you're looking at a bird or a mammal, which might have a generation length of a number of years, then really we're just talking about a few generations before these species are exposed to these dangerous climates. And yes, it seems unlikely that that's going to be long enough for them to adapt. So I think the idea that biodiversity can evolve out of this problem is unrealistic. Regardless of what we do, the climate is warming very rapidly. I don't believe that species will be able to evolve enough to escape this problem. But I think another important aspect of this is the amount of time that it gives us to adapt to the changes. So having a few extra decades before a particular region is exposed to these dangerous climate conditions can provide a lot of time for the human societies that live in those regions and that depend on them to adapt. So throughout the tropics, hundreds of millions of people depend on local ecosystems such as coral reefs for their livelihoods or for their sources of protein. And we really need to buy these communities more time to adapt to these changing conditions. It also gives us more time to develop and improve our conservation strategies, to expand our network of protected areas, to potentially assist species in evolving, to assist species in moving to new areas where the climate might remain suitable. So I think the more time we have, I think the better our chances of being able to safeguard the majority of biodiversity through to the end of the century.
I think a lot of people would like to take this warning seriously, and it got very good coverage, and you and your team did a very excellent job of making the paper and data available in various formats for everyone. But I think most people are going to say, well, that does sound serious. I'll put it on the back burner, and if we get through this emergency, we'll deal with it. But my fear is it could take a couple of years to get through this coronavirus thing, and meanwhile, that's a couple of years where the species are more and more at risk. We don't have time. We're going to have to do both at once, I think.
I think it's very clear that we have to act now. There is no time to delay in terms of reducing our emissions. This is certainly something that we really have to be making huge strides to reduce our emissions and to do this in a very rapid way.
From the University College London, you operate the Pigott Lab. What are you working on now, and what science do you look forward to?
So in our lab, we're generally interested in biodiversity. So we're interested in why biodiversity is distributed across the world in the way it is. Why, for instance, are most species living in the tropics? And we're interested in the impacts that biodiversity has on the functioning of ecosystems. So, for example, are there limits to how many species you can remove from an ecosystem before it collapses? And that obviously has important connections with this work that we're doing on climate change. And the other thing that we're really interested in is trying to push forward this work that we're We're doing projecting how the risks to biodiversity might change over the coming decades. One of the things that I mentioned earlier is that all of these projections that we've made are based on the thermal limits of the species as we observe them today. Increasingly, with these events like coral bleaching and these die-off events, we're actually seeing these temporary excursions of temperature to much higher levels, and this is impacting on species causing local extinctions. So one of the things we're really interested in is to use these current impacts of climate change to then develop more refined projections of how biodiversity might change into the future.
We've been speaking with Dr. Alex Piggott. Don't miss learning about this new article in the journal Nature. The title is The Projected Timing of Abrupt Ecological Disruption from Climate Change. You can find links to the free paper, the Nature Commentary, which was very helpful, by Dr. Sunday, and other popular press coverage, all in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Alex, thank you for explaining this serious new warning from science.
Thank you for having me on, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.